who is from the barbershop next door, stands out front, his arms folded over his big belly. He sets his narrowed eyes on Daddy. Daddy sighs.
Here we go.
We hop out. Mr. Lewis gives some of the best haircuts in Garden Heights. Sakani's high-top fade proves it, but Mr. Lewis himself wears an untidy afro. His stomach blocks his view of his feet, and since his wife passed, nobody tells him that his pants are too short and his socks don't always match. Today one is striped and the other is argyle.
The store used to open at 5:55 on the dot, he says. 5:55.
It's 6:05. Daddy unlocks the front door.
I know, Mr. Lewis, but I told you, I'm not running the store the same way Wyatt did. It sure is obvious. First you take down his pictures. Who the hell replaces the picture of Dr. King with some nobody?
Huey Newton ain't a nobody.
He ain't Dr. King. Then you hire thugs to work up in here. I heard that Khalil boy got himself killed last night. He was probably selling that stuff.
Mr. Lewis looks from Daddy's basketball jersey to his tattoos.
Wonder where he get that idea from.
Daddy's jaw tightens.
Star, turn the coffee pot on for Mr. Lewis.
So he can get the hell out of here, I say to myself, finishing Daddy's sentence for him. I flick the switch on the coffee pot at the self-serve table, which Huey Newton watches over from a photograph, his fist raised for black power. I'm supposed to replace the filter and put new coffee and water in, but for talking about Khalil, Mr. Lewis gets coffee made from day-old grounds. He limps through the aisles and gets a honey bun, an apple, and a pack of hoghead cheese. He gives me the honey bun.
Eat it up, girl, and you better not overcook it.
I leave it in the microwave until the plastic wrapper swells and pops open. Mr. Lewis eats it soon as I take it out.
That thing hot!
He chews and blows at the same time.
You heated it too long, girl. About to burn my mouth.
When Mr. Lewis leaves, Daddy winks at me. The usual customers come in, like Mrs. Jackson, who insists on buying her greens from Daddy and nobody else. Four red-eyed guys in sagging pants buy almost every bag of chips we have. Daddy tells them it's too early to be that blazed, and they laugh way too hard. One of them licks his next blunt as they leave. Around 11, Mrs. Rooks buys some roses and snacks for her bridge club meeting. She has droopy eyes and gold plating on her front teeth. Her wig is gold-colored, too.
Y'all need to get some lotto tickets up in here, baby, she says, as Daddy rings her up and I bag her stuff. Tonight is at 300 million.
Daddy smiles.
For real? What would you do with all that money, Mrs. Rooks?
Shit, baby. The question is, what I wouldn't do with all that money. Lord knows I'd get on the first plane out of here.
Daddy laughs.
Is that right? Then who gonna make red velvet cakes for us?
Somebody else, 'cause I'd be gone.
She points to the display of cigarettes behind us.
Baby, hand me a pack of them Newports.
Those are Nana's favorites, too. They used to be Daddy's favorites before I begged him to quit. I grab a pack and pass it to Mrs. Rooks. She's staring at me moments after, patting the pack against her palm, and I wait for it. The sympathy.
Baby, I heard what happened to Rosalie's grandboy, she says. I'm so sorry. Y'all used to be friends, didn't you?
The used to stings, but I just say to Mrs. Rooks, yes, ma'am. She shakes her head.
Lord have mercy. My heart about broke when I heard. I tried to go over there and see Rosalie last night, but so many people were already at the house. Poor Rosalie. All she going through, and now this. Barbara said Rosalie not sure how she gonna pay the burying. We talking about raising some money. Think you can help us out, Maverick?
Oh, yeah. Let me know what y'all need, and it's done.
She flashes those gold teeth in a smile.
Boy, it's good to see where the Lord done brought you. Your mama would be proud.
Daddy nods heavily. Grandma's been gone 10 years, long enough that Daddy doesn't cry every day. But such a short while ago that if someone brings her up, it brings him down.
And look at this girl, Mrs. Rooks says, eyeing me. Every bit of Lisa. Maverick, you better watch out. These little boys around here gonna be trying it.
Nah, they better watch out. You know I ain't having that. She can't date till she 40.
My hand drifts to my pocket, thinking of Chris and his texts. Shit, I left my phone at home. Needless to say, Daddy doesn't know a thing about Chris. We've been together over a year now. Seven knows, because he met Chris at school, and Mama figured it out when Chris would always visit me at Uncle Carlos's house, claiming he was my friend. One day she and Uncle Carlos walked in on us kissing, and they pointed out that friends don't kiss each other like that. I've never seen Chris get so red in my life. She and Seven are okay with me dating Chris, although if it was up to Seven, I'd become a nun. But whatever. I can't get the guts to tell Daddy, though. And it's not just because he doesn't want me dating yet. The bigger issue is that Chris is white. At first, I thought my mom might say something about it, but she was like, he could be polka dot as long as he's not a criminal and he's treating you right. Daddy, on the other hand, rants about how Halle Berry act like she can't get with brothers anymore, and how messed up that is. I mean, anytime he finds out a black person is with a white person, suddenly something's wrong with them. I don't want him looking at me like that. Luckily, Mama hasn't told him. She refuses to get in the middle of that fight. My boyfriend, my responsibility to tell Daddy. Mrs. Rooks leaves. Seconds later, the bell clangs. Kenya struts into the store. Her kicks are cute. Bazooka Joe Nike dunks that I haven't added to my collection. Kenya always wears fly sneakers. She goes to get her usual from the aisles. Hey, Star. Hey, Uncle Maverick.
Hey, Kenya,
Daddy answers, even though he's not her uncle, but her brother's dad.
You good?
She comes back with a jumbo bag of hot Cheetos and a Sprite.
Yeah, my mama want to know if my brother spent the night with y'all.
There she goes calling Seven my brother, like she's the only one who can claim him. It's annoying as hell.
Tell your mama I'll call her later,
Daddy says. Okay. Kenya pays for her stuff and makes eye contact with me. She jerks her head a little to the side.
I'm gonna sweep the aisles, I tell Daddy.
Kenya follows me. I grab the broom and go to the produce aisle on the other side of the store. Some grapes have spilled out from those red-eyed guys sampling before buying. I barely start sweeping before Kenya starts talking.
I heard about Khalil, she says. I'm so sorry, Star. You okay?
I make myself nod. I just can't believe it, you know? It had been a while since I saw him, but it hurts. Kenya says what I can't.
Yeah.
Fuck. I feel the tears coming.
I'm not gonna cry. I'm not gonna cry. I'm not gonna cry.
I kinda hoped he'd be in here when I walked in, she says softly, like he used to be. Bagging groceries in that ugly apron.
The green one, I mutter.
Yeah, talking about how women love a man in uniform.
I stare at the floor. If I cry now, I may never stop. Kenya pops her hot Cheetos open and holds the bag toward me. Comfort food. I reach in and get a couple. Thanks. No problem. We munch on Cheetos. Khalil's supposed to be here with us. So, I say,
and my voice is all rough. You and Dinesia got into it last night.
Girl,
she sounds like she's been waiting to drop this story for hours. Devante came over to me right before he got crazy. He asked for my number. I thought he was Dinesia's boyfriend. Devante not the type to be tied down. Anyway, Dinesia walked over to start something, but the shots went off. We ended up running down the same street, and I clocked her ass. It was so funny. You should have seen it. I would have rather seen that instead of Officer 115 or Khalil staring at the sky or all that blood. My stomach twists again. Kenya waves her hand in front of me. Hey, you okay? I blink Khalil and that cop away. Yeah, I'm good.
You sure? You real quiet.
Yeah. She lets it drop, and I let her tell me about the second round she has planned for Dinesia. Daddy calls me up front. When I get there, he hands me a 20.
Give me some beef ribs from Reuben's, and I want...
Potato salad and fried okra, I say. That's what he always has on Saturdays. He kisses my cheek.
You know your daddy. Get whatever you want, baby.
Kenya follows me out the store. We wait for a car to pass, the music blasting and the driver reclined so far back that only the tip of his nose seems to nod to the song. We cross the street to Reuben's. The smoky aroma hits us on the sidewalk, and a blues song pours outside. Inside, the walls are covered with photographs of civil rights leaders, politicians, and celebrities who have eaten here, like James Brown and pre-heart bypass Bill Clinton. There's a picture of Dr. King and a much younger Mr. Reuben. A bulletproof partition separates the customers from the cashier. I fan myself after a few minutes in line. The air conditioner in the window stopped working months ago, and the smoker heats up the whole building. When we get to the front of the line, Mr. Reuben greets us with a gap-toothed smile from behind the partition.
Hey, Star and Kenya, how y'all doing?
Mr. Reuben is one of the only people around here who actually calls me by my name. He remembers everybody's name somehow. Hey, Mr. Reuben, I say. My daddy wants his usual. He writes it on a pad.
All right. Beefs, potato salad, okra. Y'all want fried barbecue wings and fries? And extra sauce for you, Star Baby?
He remembers everybody's usual orders, too, somehow. Yes, sir, we say.
All right. Y'all been staying out of trouble?
Yes, sir, Kenya lies with ease.
How about some pound cake on the house, then? Reward for good behavior.
We say yeah and thank him. But see, Mr. Reuben could know about Kenya's fight and would offer her pound cake regardless. He's nice like that. He gives kids free meals if they bring in their report cards. If it's a good one, he'll make a copy and put it on the all-star wall. If it's bad, as long as they own up to it and promise to do better, he'll still give them a meal.
It's gonna take about 15 minutes, he says.
That means sit and wait till your number is called. We find a table next to some white guys. You rarely see white people in Garden Heights, but when you do, they're usually at Reuben's. The men watch the news on the box TV in the corner of the ceiling. I munch on some of Kenya's hot Cheetos. They would taste much better with cheese sauce on them. Has there been anything on the news about Khalil? She pays more attention to her phone.
Yeah, like I watch the news. I think I saw something on Twitter, though.
I wait. Between a story about a bad car accident on the freeway and a garbage bag of live puppies that was found in a park, there's a short story about an officer-involved shooting that is being investigated. They don't even say Khalil's name.
Some bullshit.
We get our food and head back to the store. Right as we cross the street, a gray BMW pulls up beside us, bass thumping inside like the car has a heartbeat. The driver's side window rolls down, smoke drifts out, and the male 300-pound version of Kenya smiles at us.
What up, Queens?
Kenya leans in through the window and kisses his cheek. Hey, Daddy.
Hey, Star Star,
he says.
Not gonna say hey to your uncle?
You ain't my uncle, I wanna say. You ain't shit to me. And if you touch my brother again, I'll... Hey, King, I finally mumble. His smile fades like he hears my thoughts. He puffs on a cigar and blows smoke from the corner of his mouth. Two tears are tattooed under his left eye. Two lives he's taken, at least.
I see y'all been to Reuben's. Here.
He holds out two fat rolls of money.
Make up for whatever y'all spent.
Kenya takes one easily, but I'm not touching that dirty money. No thanks.
Go on, Queen. King winks. Take some money from your godfather. Nah, she good,
Daddy says. He walks toward us. Daddy leans against the car window so he's eye level with King and gives him one of those guy handshakes with so many movements you wonder how they remember it.
Big laugh,
Kenya's dad says with a grin.
What up, King? Don't call me that shit.
Daddy doesn't say it loudly or angrily, but in the same way I would tell somebody not to put onions or mayo on my burger. Daddy once told me that King's parents named him after the same gang he later joined, and that's why a name is important. It defines you. King became a King Lord when he took his first breath.
I was just giving my goddaughter some pocket change, King says. I heard what happened to her little homie. That's fucked up. Yeah, you know how it is,
Daddy says.
Popo shoot first, ask questions later. No doubt, they worse than us sometimes.
King chuckles.
But hey, on some business shit. I got a package coming, need somewhere to keep it. Got too many eyes on Aisha's house. I already told you that shit ain't going down here.
King rubs his beard.
Oh, okay. So, folks get out the game, forget where they come from. Forget that if it wasn't for my money, they wouldn't have their little store. And if it wasn't for me, you'd be locked up. 3 years, state pen. Remember that shit? I don't owe you nothing.
Daddy leans onto the window and says,
But if you touch 7 again, I'll owe you an ass whooping. Remember that. Now that you done moved back in with his mama.
King sucks his teeth.
Kenya, get in the car.
But Daddy...
I said, get your ass in the car.
Kenya mumbles bye to me. She goes around to the passenger side and hops in.
Aight, Big Mav. So it's like that?
King says. Daddy straightens up.
It's exactly like that. Aight, then. You just make sure your ass don't get out of line. Ain't no telling what I'll do.
The BMW peels out. 4. That night, Natasha tries to convince me to follow her to the fire hydrant, and Khalil begs for me to go for a ride with him. I force a smile, my lips trembling, and tell them I can't hang out. They keep asking, and I keep saying no. Darkness crawls toward them. I try to warn them, but my voice doesn't work. The shadow swallows them up in an instant. Now it creeps toward me. I back away, only to find it behind me. I wake up. My clock glows with the numbers 11:05. I suck in deep breaths. Sweat glues my tank top and basketball shorts to my skin.
Sirens scream nearby, and Bricks and other dogs bark in response. Sitting on the side of my bed, I rub my face as if that'll wipe the nightmare away. No way I can go back to sleep, not if it means seeing them again. My throat is lined with sandpaper and aches for water. When my feet touch the cold floor, goosebumps pop up all over me. Daddy always has the air conditioning on high in the spring and summer, turning the house into a meat locker. The rest of us shiver our butts off, but he enjoys it, saying, "A little cold never hurt nobody." A lie. I drag myself down the hall. Halfway to the kitchen, I hear Mama say, "Why can't they wait? She just saw one of her best friends die. She doesn't need to relive that right now." I stop. Light from the kitchen stretches into the hallway.
"We have to investigate, Lisa," says a second voice,
Uncle Carlos, Mama's older brother.
"We want the truth as much as anyone." "You mean y'all want to justify what that pig did?" Daddy says. "Investigate my ass." "Maverick, don't make this something it's not," Uncle Carlos says. "A 16-year-old black boy is dead because a white cop killed him. What else could it be?"
"Shh," Mama hisses. "Keep it down. Star had the hardest time falling asleep." Uncle Carlos says something, but it's too low for me to hear. I inch closer.
"This isn't about black or white," he says. "Bullshit," says Daddy. "If this was out in Riverton Hills and his name was Richie, we wouldn't be having this conversation."
"I heard he was a drug dealer," says Uncle Carlos.
"And that makes it okay?" Daddy asks.
"I didn't say it did, but it could explain Brian's decision if he felt threatened."
A no lodges in my throat, aching to be yelled out. Khalil wasn't a threat that night. And what made the cop think he was a drug dealer? Wait, Brian? That's 115's name?
"Oh, so you know him?" Daddy mocks. "I ain't surprised. He's a colleague, yes, and a good guy, believe it or not. I'm sure this is hard on him. Who knows what he was thinking at the time? You said it yourself. He thought Khalil was a drug dealer," Daddy says. "A thug. Why he assumed that, though? What? By looking at Khalil? Explain that, detective."
Silence.
"Why was she even in the car with a drug dealer?" Uncle Carlos asks. "Lisa, I keep telling you, you need to move her and Sakani out of this neighborhood. It's poisonous."
"I've been thinking about it."
"And we're not going anywhere," Daddy says.
"Maverick, she's seen two of her friends get killed," Mama says. "Two. And she's only 16.
"And one was at the hands of a person who was supposed to protect her. What, you think if you live next door to them, they'll treat you different?"
"Why does it always have to be about race with you?" Uncle Carlos asks. "Other races aren't killing us nearly as much as we're killing ourselves."
"Negro, please. If I kill Tyrone, I'm going to prison. If a cop kills me, he's getting put on leave. Maybe."
"You know what? There's no point in having this conversation with you," Uncle Carlos says. "Will you at least consider letting Star speak to the detectives handling the case?"
"We should probably get her an attorney first, Carlos," Mama says.
"That's not necessary right now," he says. "And it wasn't necessary for that cop to pull the trigger," says Daddy. "You really think we gonna let them talk to our daughter and twist her words around because she doesn't have a lawyer?" "Nobody's going to twist her words around. I told you, we want the truth to come out too." "Oh, we know the truth, and that's not what we want," says Daddy. "We want justice."
Uncle Carlos sighs.
"Lisa, the sooner she talks to the detectives, the better. It will be a simple process. All she has to do is answer some questions. That's it. No need to spend money to get an attorney just yet.
Frankly, Carlos, we don't want anyone to know Star was there, Mama says. She's scared. I am too. Who knows what's going to happen?
I get that, but I assure you she'll be protected. If you don't trust the system, can you at least trust me?
I don't know, says Daddy.
Can we? You know what, Maverick? I've just about had it with you.
You can get out my house, then.
It wouldn't even be your house if it wasn't for me and my mom.
Y'all, stop, Mama says. I shift my weight, and goddamn if the floor doesn't creak, which is like sounding an alarm. Mama glances around the kitchen doorway and down the hall, straight at me. Star, baby, what you doing up? Now I have no choice but to go to the kitchen. The three of them are sitting around the table, my parents in their pajamas, and Uncle Carlos in some sweats and a hoodie.
Hey, baby girl, he says. We didn't wake you up, did we?
No, I say, sitting next to Mama. I was already awake. Nightmares. All of them look sympathetic, even though I didn't say it for sympathy. I kinda hate sympathy. What are you doing here? I ask Uncle Carlos.
Sakani has a stomach bug and begged me to bring him home. And your uncle was just getting ready to leave,
Daddy adds. Uncle Carlos's jaw twitches. His face has gotten rounder since he made detective. He has Mama's high yellow complexion, as Nana calls it. And when he gets mad, his face turns deep red, like it is now.
I'm sorry about Khalil, baby girl, he says. I was just telling your parents how the detectives would like for you to come in and answer a few questions. But you don't have to do it if you don't wanna,
Daddy says.
You know what?
Uncle Carlos begins. Stop, please, says Mama. She looks at me. Munch, do you want to talk to the cops? I swallow. I wish I could say yes, but I don't know. On one hand, it's the cops. It's not like I'll be telling just anybody. On the other hand, it's the cops. One of them killed Khalil. But Uncle Carlos is a cop, and he wouldn't ask me to do something that would hurt me. Will it help Khalil get justice? I ask. Uncle Carlos nods.
It will.
Will 115 be there?
Who?
The officer. That's his badge number, I say. I remember it.
Oh, no. He won't be there, I promise. It'll be okay.
Uncle Carlos's promises are guarantees. Sometimes even more than my parents. He never uses that word unless he absolutely means it. Okay, I say. I'll do it.
Thank you.
Uncle Carlos comes over and gives me two kisses to my forehead, the way he's done since he used to tuck me in.
Lisa, just bring her after school on Monday. It shouldn't take too long.
Mama gets up and hugs him. Thank you. She walks him down the hall toward the front door. Be safe, okay? And text me when you get home.
Yes, ma'am. Sounded like our mama,
he teases. Whatever. You just better text me.
Okay, okay. Good night.
Mama comes back to the kitchen, pulling her robe together. Munch, your father and I are visiting Miss Rosalie in the morning instead of going to church. You're welcome to come if you want.
Yeah, Daddy says. And ain't no uncle pressuring you to go.
Mama cuts him a quick glare, then turns to me. So, you think you're up for it, Star? Talking to Miss Rosalie may be harder than talking to the cops, honestly. But I owe it to Khalil to pay his grandmother a visit. She may not even know I was a witness to the shooting. If she somehow does and wants to know what happened, more than anybody she has the right to ask. Yeah, I'll go.
We better find her an attorney before she talks to the detectives,
Daddy says. Maverick, Mama sighs. If Carlos doesn't think it's necessary just yet, I trust his judgment. Plus, I'll be with her the entire time.
Good thing somebody trusts his judgment,
says Daddy.
And you really been thinking again about moving? We discussed this already.
Maverick, I'm not going there with you tonight.
How we gonna change anything around here if we...
Maverick, she says through gritted teeth. Whenever Mama breaks a name down like that, you better hope it's not yours. I said, I'm not going there tonight. She side-eyes him, waiting for the comeback. There isn't one. Try and get some sleep, baby, she tells me and kisses my cheek before going to their room. Daddy goes to the refrigerator.
You want some grapes?
Yeah. How come you and Uncle Carlos always fighting?
'Cause he a buster.
He joins me at the table with a bowl of white grapes.
But for real, he ain't never liked me. Thought I was a bad influence on your mama. Lisa was wild when I met her, though, like all them other Catholic school girls.
I bet he was more protective of Mama than Seven is with me, huh?
Oh, yeah, he says. Carlos acted like he was Lisa's daddy. When I got locked up, he moved y'all in with him and blocked my calls. Even took her to a divorce attorney. He grins. Still couldn't get rid of me.
I was 3 when Daddy went in prison, 6 when he got out. A lot of my memories include him, but a lot of my firsts don't. First day of school, the first time I lost a tooth, the first time I rode a bike without training wheels. In those memories, Uncle Carlos's face is where Daddy's should have been. I think that's the real reason they're always fighting. Daddy drums the mahogany surface of the dining table, making a thump, thump, thump beat.
The nightmares will go away after a while, he says. They're always the worst right after.
That's how it was with Natasha. How many people have you seen die?
Enough. Worst one was my cousin Andre.
His finger seems to instinctively trace the tattoo on his forearm, an A with a crown over it.
A drug deal turned into a robbery, and he got shot in the head 2, right in front of me. A few months before you were born, in fact. That's why I named you Star.
He gives me a small smile.
My light during all that darkness.
Daddy chomps on some grapes.
Don't be scared about Monday. Tell the cops the truth. And don't let them put words in your mouth. God gave you a brain. You don't need theirs. And remember that you didn't do nothing wrong. The cop did. Don't let them make you think otherwise.
Something's bugging me. I wanted to ask Uncle Carlos, but I couldn't for some reason. Daddy's different, though. While Uncle Carlos somehow keeps impossible promises, Daddy keeps it real with me. You think the cops want Khalil to have justice? I ask.
Thump, thump, thump. Thump, thump, thump.
The truth casts a shadow over the kitchen. People like us in situations like this become hashtags, but they rarely get justice. I think we all wait for that one time, though, that one time, when it ends right. Maybe this can be it.
I don't know,
Daddy says.
I guess we'll find out.
Sunday morning, we pull up to a small yellow house. Bright flowers bloom below the front porch. I used to sit with Khalil on that porch. My parents and I hop out the truck. Daddy carries a foil-covered pan of lasagna that Mama made. Sakani claims he's still not feeling good, so he stayed home. Seven's there with him. I don't buy this sick act, though. Takani always gets some kind of bug right as spring break ends. Going up Miss Rosalie's walkway floods me with memories. I have scars tattooed on my arms and legs from falls on this concrete. One time I was on my scooter and Khalil pushed me off 'cause I hadn't given him a turn. When I got up, skin was missing from most of my knee. I never screamed so loud in my life. We played hopscotch and jumped rope on this walkway, too. Khalil never wanted to play at first, talking about how those were girls' games. He always gave in when me and Natasha said the winner got a freeze cup, frozen Kool-Aid in a styrofoam cup, or a pack of Nihilators, a.k.a. Now and Laters. Ms. Rosalie was the neighborhood candy lady. I was at her house almost as much as I was at my own. Mama and Ms. Rosalie's youngest daughter, Tammy, were best friends growing up. When Mama got pregnant with me, she was in her senior year of high school, and Nana put her out the house. Ms. Rosalie took her in until my parents eventually got an apartment of their own. Mama says Ms. Rosalie was one of her biggest supporters and cried at her high school graduation like it was her own daughter walking across the stage. 3 years later, Ms. Rosalie saw Mama and me at Wyatt's. This was way before it became our store. She asked my mom how college was going. Mama told her that with Daddy in prison, she couldn't afford daycare, and that Nana wouldn't take care of me 'cause I wasn't her baby, and therefore I wasn't her problem. So Mama was thinking about dropping out. Ms. Rosalie told her to bring me to her house the next day, and that she better not say a word about paying her. She babysat me and later Sikani the whole time Mama was in school. Mama knocks on the door, rattling the screen. Miss Tammy answers in a head wrap, T-shirt, and sweatpants. She unhooks the locks, hollering back, "Maverick, Lisa, and Star here, Ma!" The living room looks just like it did when Khalil and I played hide-and-seek in it. There's still plastic on the sofa and recliner. If you sit on them too long in the summer while wearing shorts, the plastic nearly glues to your legs. "Hey, Tammy girl," Mama says, and they hug long and hard. "How you doing?" "I'm hanging in there." Miss Tammy hugs Daddy, then me. "Just hate that this is the reason I had to come home." It's so weird looking at Miss Tammy. She looks the way Khalil's mama, Miss Brenda, would look if Miss Brenda wasn't on crack. A lot like Khalil. Same hazel eyes and dimples. One time Khalil said he wished Miss Tammy was his mama instead, so he could live in New York with her. I used to joke and tell him she didn't have time for him. I wish I never said that.
"Where you want me to put this lasagna, Tim?"
Daddy asks her.
"In the refrigerator if you can find room," she says, as he heads toward the kitchen. "Mama said folks brought food all day yesterday. They were still bringing it when I got here last night. Seems like the whole neighborhood has stopped by." "That's the garden for you," Mama says. "If folks can't do anything else, they'll cook." "You ain't ever lied," Miss Tammy motions to the sofa. "Y'all have a seat." Mama and I sit down, and Daddy comes back and joins us. Miss Tammy takes the recliner that Miss Rosalie usually sits in. She gives me a sad smile. "Star, you know, you sure have grown since the last time I saw you. You and Khalil both grew up, so..."
Her voice cracks. Mama reaches over and pats her knee. Miss Tammy takes a deep breath and smiles at me again.
"It's good to see you, baby."
"We know Miss Rosalie gonna tell us she fine, Tam," Daddy says. "But how's she really doing?"
"We're taking one day at a time. The chemo's working, thankfully. I hope I can convince her to move in with me. That way I can make sure she's getting her prescriptions." She sighs through her nose. "I had no idea Mama was struggling like she was. I didn't even know she'd lost her job. You know how she is, never want to ask for help."
"What about Miss Brenda?" I ask.
I have to. Khalil would have.
I don't know, Star. Bryn, that's complicated. We haven't seen her since we got the news. Don't know where she is. If we do find her, though, I don't know what we'll do.
I can help you find a rehab facility near you, Mama says. She's gotta wanna get clean, though.
Miss Tammy nods, and that's the problem. But I think this will either push her to finally get help or push her over the edge. I hope it's the former.
Cameron holds his grandma's hand as he leads her into the living room, like she's the queen of the world in a housecoat. She looks thinner, but strong for somebody going through chemo and all of this. A scarf wrapped around her head adds to her majesty, an African queen, and we're blessed to be in her presence. The rest of us stand. Mama hugs Cameron and kisses one of his chubby cheeks. Khalil called him Chipmunk because of them, but he'd check anybody stupid enough to call his little brother fat. Daddy gives Cameron a palm slap that ends in a hug.
What's up, man? You okay?
Yes, sir. A big wide smile spreads across Miss Rosalie's face. She holds her arms out, and I walk into the most heartfelt hug I've ever gotten from somebody who's not related to me. There's not any sympathy in it either. Just love and strength. I guess she knows I need some of both.
My baby, she says.
She pulls back and looks at me, tears brimming in her eyes.
Went and grew up on me.
She hugs my parents, too. Miss Tammy lets her have the recliner. Miss Rosalie pats the end of the sofa closest to her, so I sit there. She holds my hand and rubs her thumb along the top of it. She says. It's like my hand is telling her a story and she's responding. She listens to it for a while, then says,
I'm so glad you came over. I've been wanting to talk to you.
Yes, ma'am, I say when I'm supposed to.
You were the very best friend that boy ever had.
This time, I can't say what I'm supposed to. Miss Rosalie, we weren't as close.
I don't care, baby, she says. Khalil never had another friend like you. I know that for a fact.
I swallow. Yes, ma'am.
The police told me you were the one with him when it happened.
So she knows.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm standing on a track, watching the train barrel toward me, and I tense up and wait for the impact, the moment she asks what happened. But the train shifts to another track.
Maverick, he wanted to talk to you. He wanted your help.
Daddy straightens up.
For real?
Uh-huh. He was selling that stuff.
Something leaves me. I mean, I kind of figured it, but to know it's the truth, this hurts. But I swear I want to cuss Khalil out. How could he sell the very stuff that took his mama from him? Did he realize that he was taking somebody else's mama from them? Did he realize that if he does become a hashtag, some people will only see him as a drug dealer? He was so much more than that.
But he wanted to stop, Miss Rosalie says. He told me, Grandma, I can't stay in this. Mr. Maverick said it only leads to two things, the grave or prison. And I ain't trying to see either. He respected you, Maverick, a lot. You were the father he never had.
I can't explain it, but something leaves Daddy, too. His eyes dim, and he nods. Mama rubs his back.
Now, I tried to talk some sense into him, Miss Rosalie says. But this neighborhood makes young men deaf to their elders. The money part didn't help.
He was going around here paying bills, buying sneakers and mess. But I know he remembered the things you told him over the years, Maverick, and that gave me a lot of faith. I keep thinking if only he had another day or...
Miss Rosalie covers her trembling lips. Miss Tammy starts for her, but she says,
I'm okay, Tam.
She looks at me. I'm happy he wasn't alone, but I'm even happier you were with him. That's all I need to know. Don't need details, nothing else. Knowing you were with him is good enough. Like Daddy, all I can do is nod. But as I hold Khalil's grandma's hand, I see the anguish in her eyes. His little brother can't smile anymore. So what if people end up thinking he was a thug and never care? We care. Khalil matters to us, not the stuff he did. Forget everybody else. Mama leans across me and sets an envelope in Miss Rosalie's lap. We want you to have that. Miss Rosalie opens it, and I catch a glimpse of a whole lot of money inside.
What in the world? Y'all know I can't take this.
Yes, you can, Daddy says. We ain't forgot how you kept Star and Sakani for us. We weren't about to let you be empty-handed.
And we know y'all are trying to pay for the funeral, Mama says. Hopefully that'll help. Plus, we're raising money around the neighborhood, too. So don't you worry about a thing. Miss Rosalie wipes a new set of tears from her eyes.
I'm gonna pay y'all back every penny.
Did we say you had to pay us back? Daddy asks. You focus on getting better, all right? And if you give us any money, we giving it right back. God's my witness.
There are a lot more tears and hugs. Miss Rosalie gives me a freeze cup for the road, red syrup glistening on the top. She always makes them extra sweet. As we leave, I remember how Khalil used to run up to the car when I was about to go. The sun shining on the grease lines that separated his cornrows. The glimmer in his eyes would be just as bright. He'd knock on the window, I'd let it down, and he'd say, with a snaggletooth grin, "See you later, alligator." Back then I'd giggle behind my own snaggleteeth. Now I tear up. Goodbyes hurt the most when the other person's already gone. I imagine him standing at my window and I smile, for his sake. After a while, crocodile. 5. On Monday, the day I'm supposed to talk to the detectives, I'm crying out of nowhere, hunched over my bed as the iron in my hand spits out steam. Mama takes it before I burn the Williamson crest on my polo. She rubs my shoulder. Let it out, Munch. We have a quiet breakfast at the kitchen table without Seven. He spent the night at his mama's house. I pick at my waffles. Just thinking about going into that station with all those cops makes me want to puke. Food would make it worse. After breakfast, we join hands in the living room like we always do, under the framed poster of the 10-point program, and Daddy leads us in prayer.
Black Jesus, watch over my babies today, he says. Keep them safe, steer them from wrong, and help them recognize snakes from friends. Give them the wisdom they need to be their own people. Help Seven with this situation at his mama's house, and let him know he can always come home. Thank you for Sakani's miraculous sudden healing that just so happened to come after he found out they're having pizza at school today.
I peek out at Sakani, whose eyes and mouth are open wide. I smirk and close my eyes.
Be with Lisa at the clinic as she helps your people. Help my baby girl get through her situation, Lord. Give her peace of mind, and help her speak her truth this afternoon. And lastly, strengthen Ms. Rosalie, Cameron, T. Tammy, and Brenda as they go through this difficult time. In your precious name I pray. Amen.
Amen, the rest of us say. Daddy, why you put me on the spot like that with Black Jesus? Sekani complains.
He knows the truth,
Daddy says. He wipes crust from the corners of Sekani's eyes and straightens the collar of his polo.
I'm trying to help you out, get you some mercy or something, man.
Daddy pulls me into a hug.
You gonna be all right?
I nod into his chest. Yeah. I could stay like this all day. It's one of the few places where 115 doesn't exist, and where I can forget about talking to detectives. But Mama says we need to leave before rush hour. Now don't get it wrong, I can drive. I got my license a week after my 16th birthday. But I can't get a car unless I pay for it myself. I told my parents I don't have time for a job with school and basketball. They said I don't have time for a car then either. Messed up. It takes 45 minutes to get to school on a good day, and an hour on a slow one. Sekani doesn't have to wear his headphones because Mama doesn't cuss anybody out on the freeway. She hums with gospel songs on the radio and says, "Give me strength, Lord, give me strength." We get off the freeway into Riverton Hills and pass all these gated neighborhoods. Uncle Carlos lives in one of them. To me, it's so weird to have a gate around a neighborhood. Seriously, are they trying to keep people out or keep people in? If somebody puts a gate around Garden Heights, it'll be a little bit of both. Our school is gated, too, and the campus has new modern buildings with lots of windows and marigolds blooming along the walkways. Mama gets in the carpool lane for the lower school. Sekani, you remembered your iPad? Yes, ma'am. Lunch card? Yes, ma'am. Gym shorts, and you better have gotten the clean ones, too. Yes, Mama, I'm almost 9. Can't you give me a little credit? She smiles. All right, big man. Think you can give me some sugar? Sekani leans over the front seat and kisses her cheek. Love you. Love you, too. And don't forget Seven's bringing you home today. He runs over to some of his friends and blends in with all the other kids in khakis and polos. We get in the carpool lane for my school. All right, Munch, Mama says. Seven's gonna bring you to the clinic after school. Then you and I will go to the station. Are you absolutely sure you're up for it? No, but Uncle Carlos promised it'll be okay. I'll do it. Okay. Call me if you don't think you can make it the whole day at school. Hold up, I could have stayed home? Why are you making me come in the first place? 'Cause you need to get out the house, out that neighborhood. I want you to at least try, Star. This will sound mean, but just because Khalil's not living doesn't mean you stop living. You understand, baby? Yeah, I know she's right. But it feels wrong. We get to the front of the carpool line. Now, I don't have to ask if you brought some funky-ass gym shorts, do I? She says. I laugh. No. Bye, Mama. Bye, baby. I get out the car. For at least 7 hours, I don't have to talk about 115. I don't have to think about Khalil. I just have to be normal Star at normal Williamson and have a normal day. That means flipping the switch in my brain, so I'm Williamson Star. Williamson Star doesn't use slang. If a rapper would say it, she doesn't say it, even if her white friends do. Slang makes them cool. Slang makes her hood. Williamson Star holds her tongue when people piss her off, so nobody will think she's the angry black girl. Williamson Star is approachable. No stank eyes, side eyes, none of that. Williamson Starr is non-confrontational. Basically, Williamson Starr doesn't give anyone a reason to call her ghetto. I can't stand myself for doing it, but I do it anyway. I sling my backpack over my shoulder. As usual, it matches my J's, the blue and black 11s like Jordan wore in Space Jam. I worked at the store a month to buy them. I hate dressing like everybody else, but the Fresh Prince taught me something. See, Will always wore his school uniform jacket inside out so he could be different. I can't wear my uniform inside out, but I can make sure my sneakers are always dope and my backpack always matches them. I go inside and scan the atrium for Maya, Haley, or Chris. I don't see them, but I see that half the kids have tans from spring break. Luckily, I was born with one. Someone covers my eyes. Maya, I know that's you. She snickers and moves her hands. I'm not tall at all, but Maya has to stand on her tiptoes to cover my eyes. And the chick actually wants to play center on the varsity basketball team. She wears her hair in a high bun because she probably thinks it makes her look taller, but nope.
What's up, Miss I Can't Text Anyone Back?
She says, and we do our little handshake. It's not complicated like Daddy and King's, but it works for us.
I was starting to wonder if you were abducted by aliens.
Huh? She holds up her phone. The screen has a brand new crack stretching from corner to corner. Maya's always dropping it.
You haven't texted me in 2 days, Star,
she says.
Not cool.
Oh, I've barely looked at my phone since Khalil got... since the incident. Sorry, I was working at the store. You know how crazy that can get. How was your spring break?
Okay, I guess.
She munches on some Sour Patch Kids.
We visited my great-grandparents in Taipei. I ended up taking a bunch of snapbacks and basketball shorts, so all week long I heard, "Why do you dress like a boy? Why do you play a boy sport? Blah, blah, blah." And it was awful when they saw a picture of Ryan. They asked if he was a rapper.
I laugh and steal some of her candy. Maya's boyfriend Ryan happens to be the only other black kid in 11th grade, and everybody expects us to be together. Because apparently when it's two of us, we have to be on some Noah's Ark type shit and pair up to preserve the blackness of our grade. Lately, I'm super aware of BS like that. We head for the cafeteria. Our table near the vending machines is almost full. There's Haley sitting on top of it, having a heated discussion with curly-haired, dimpled Luke. I think that's foreplay for them. They've liked each other since 6th grade, and if your feelings can survive the awkwardness of middle school, you should stop playing around and go out. Some of the other girls from the team are there, too. Jess, the co-captain, and Britt, the center, who makes Maya look like an aunt. It's kind of stereotypical that we all sit together, but it worked out that way. I mean, who else will listen to us bitch about swollen knees and understand inside jokes born on the bus after a game? Chris's boys from the basketball team are at the table next to ours, egging Haley and Luke on. Chris isn't there yet, unfortunately, and fortunately. Luke sees me and Maya and reaches his arms toward us.
Thank you! Two sensible people who can end this discussion!
I slide onto the bench beside Jess. She rests her head on my shoulder.
They've been at it for 15 minutes.
Poor girl. I pat her hair. I have a secret crush on Jess's pixie cut. My neck's not long enough for one, but her hair is perfect. Every strand is where it should be. If I were into girls, I would totally date her for her hair, and she would date me for my shoulder.
What's it about this time? I ask.
Pop-Tarts, Britt says.
Haley turns to us and points at Luke.
This jerk actually said they're better warmed up in the microwave.
Ew, I say, instead of my usual ill, and Maya goes,
Are you serious?
I know, right?
says Haley.
Jesus Christ, Luke says. I only asked for a dollar to buy one from the machine.
You're not wasting my money to destroy a perfectly good Pop-Tart in a microwave.